you're down and troubled and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right. Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today. Former actor, director, and teacher-turned-caregiver, best-selling author Donna Thompson redefines the good life for caregivers. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are, well, caring, selfless, sacrificial. Okay, I know that's three. But one other thing they are, they're also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you about all that emergency information, you know, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. Well, the reason they tell you all that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones. And then you won't be of any help to anybody with anything. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here on this show and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It kind of automatically throws us into this thing, another thing, called the grief process. Ouch. Well, unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process. You have to go through it. You can't go around it. You can't go over it. You can't go under it. You have to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my show and my radio podcast, my books, my videos, my blog. I know what you're thinking. You're saying, God, it's all about me. No, but it's not all about me. It's all about you, actually. So just go to my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, or the shortcut of just CaregiversCaregiver.com. And when you go to my website, you'll want to take a short quiz. Are you a candidate for burnout? And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free link to my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. It's about my amazing wife's story. Okay, and mine too. It's still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So please don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will assess where you are in the burnout process. And the best part is, you get my book absolutely free just for doing that. Now, Amazon is still selling it for almost $10, so it's a great value. Okay, now I would like to take this moment to thank my last week's guest, Aging Boomers, Caregiver or Nursing Home, What to Do When We Live Too Long. Former caregiver Janice Lynch Schuster is an essayist, poet, and illustrator, and her writing often appears in the Washington Post and Maria Shriver's The Shriver Report. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now, Donna Thompson. Welcome to the show, Donna.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sorry you had to sit through all of that introduction stuff. Why don't you just...
I loved it.
Well, yeah, it's very informative. And why don't you begin by telling us a little bit about yourself? Just who is Donna Thompson?
Well, I am a mother. My husband and I have two children, and they're grown up now. Our daughter, Natalie, she is 23, and our son, Nicholas, who's 26. And Nicholas has severe cerebral palsy, and he is medically complex, which means that he is largely bedridden. He has chronic pain, which we manage fairly well, but it really helps to lie down a lot. And he needs 24-hour one-to-one nursing care. That said, he has a really fantastic life full of love and he's able to pursue his many interests in spite of the fact that he's non-speaking. He has many elements of his physical disability that mm-hmm. are very handicapping, but because he has wonderful helpers and a very loving extended family, he has a great life. And I also help to look after my mom, who is 93 and
wow.
is very frail but feisty. Her body doesn't obey the energy and feisty aspects of her personality. So she's getting older, but she still sort of smokes a pack a day, likes her rum and coke, but she doesn't, you know, get dressed much anymore or anything. She's kind of exhausted, really, all the time.
Really?
She's full of personality and full of jokes. So she's great. Those are the people that I love and that I help to look after.
Well, did you inherit any of that feistiness from her?
A little bit. You know, I'm a powerful advocate for those I love. So I will go to battle to get the best care for the people I love. And maybe that's an element of her feistiness, but she's a whole horse of a different, whatever that metaphor is. She is very funny. She was working in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, all of our growing up when nobody else's mom was working. She's a bit of a rebel.
Wow. You know, you and I have a lot in common. I also have a mom who's 92. She has dementia, but she's also quite a character. And, of course, my wife of 40 years had a stroke 19 years ago, and she also is nonverbal. She doesn't speak very much. It's kind of like charades. She can gesture and give me looks and some tonality. She knows just a handful of words. It's kind of like playing charades and Pictionary, two
yeah.
games that I really don't like, so God has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Well,
my dad had three strokes, too, and lost his speech.
Really?
Our family experience with my dad, it was kind of interesting. It does teach you to be a very, very good listener when you live with somebody you love who is non-speaking. You learn to listen on a whole other level.
Yes. I'm sure you're aware of it, but there's a term for us people. It's called the sandwich generation. What that means is we're in the middle. We're the meat, and the bread is the people that we care for. So, you know, in our case, we're caring for our mother, and we're also caring for our wife. Now, there are some people who actually have a club sandwich. They have small children at home, and they may be caring for, like, a wife, and then they're caring for their elderly parents. This is a phenomenon to the baby boomers, because there's so many of them out there, and they're getting older. We just did a show last week, I think it was, that is explaining how boomers are kind of in trouble because so many of them are going to need caregivers that they're just physically, family caregivers, you know, not the professional ones, that they're just are not physically enough family caregivers to handle this tidal wave of boomers that are going to need care. So that was a very interesting show. I never even considered that, but it's something to consider. You know, I don't think we're there yet. There's going to have to be a lot more creative ways for family caregivers to take care of their loved ones.
Yeah, it's a great interest of mine. The disability community has done a lot of work in this area because, of course, parents of children with disabilities, our baby boomer generation is the first generation of parents whose children with disabilities are likely to outlive them.
Wow.
So this is a new social phenomenon. And of course, if you speak to any parent of a child with a disability, one of the first worries they have is what will happen to my child when I die. There are very clever people who have been really innovating in terms of social innovation and designing a social response to that question, who will look after my child with disability when I die, and who will love my child? Personal support networks came out of this movement, and of course, the work of people like John McKnight at the Asset-Based Community Development Institute, the ABCD Institute. These are people who know that there are people in our neighborhoods and in our communities who don't have caregiving responsibilities, but maybe aren't fulfilled in their social relationships because we kind of maybe go bowling alone and we don't have the kind of community connectedness that we did once upon a time in our society.
Wow.
And sometimes befriending an elderly person like us in the future or our children with disabilities in a coordinated network of support is one way to answer that question, so that everybody takes a little piece of the care and gets a sense of personal fulfillment from the intimacy that we know is joyful when we look
yes.
after people we love.
Yes, well, that's very interesting. And I should tell the audience that you are Canadian, because that is actually the horse of a different color. Canadians just
yes.
do things differently, you know, and they say things differently. Like, you know, they say, eh? Love to throw that Canadian joke in there.
Yeah.
So is this a Canadian thing that you're talking about, or is it not?
No, the Asset-Based Community Development Institute is American. It's housed at Northwestern University. John McKnight is an American. Yeah, Michelle Obama is a big, big supporter of this. Many people are, because it's just a plain good idea to look around your community and to find where are the assets inside people's homes. And like maybe somebody really is a good cook and maybe they would like to be able to share their cooking with their neighbors, that kind of thing.
Wow.
That's what it's about. Is trying to figure out
great idea.
How to organize all of that informal mm-hmm. stuff in neighborhoods. These ideas about how to look after vulnerable people without burning out caregivers, the good ideas are floating around internationally. I'm very interested to know, obviously, how can my mom and our son have a good life in spite of the fact that they very rarely leave their home? How can I and my husband have a retirement, and how can we survive the burden of care that exists in our family? Because the dependency care that they require is way too much for one or two people to provide.
These are great questions, and not many people are asking them. But I'm thrilled to hear about this. Let's talk about your new book. I don't know if it's your new book, but The Four Walls of My Freedom, Lessons I've Learned from a Life of Caregiving. Why did you write it?
You know, I think like many caregivers who have spent really most of their adult life looking after people, I believed that our family experience was so different from other people's. I mean, our son has had 77 hospitalizations. Many
wow.
surgeries that went very wrong and lots of complications medically. And so, you know, you kind of begin to think that you're outside of the rest of the world. You're just living in a hospital world and your experience is so different from other people's. So if you meet somebody in a grocery store and they say, "How are you?" you just kind of say, "I'm fine." Because you really don't have anything to say that they could identify with. And I believe that we were like that. Until I had a conversation with someone who told me about the work of an economist who won the Nobel Prize for Economics in 1998. And this man is called Amartya Sen, and he's originally from India, and he did work in understanding how people could have a life that they valued within circumstances of great adversity. And so when I heard that, I was very interested in if somebody asked me, what, given all the givens, not magical thinking about taking your son's disability away or your mother's, you know, C. difficile away. Like, no, we have certain realities in our life, but given all of your harsh realities, what would a life look like that you could value and your son could value and your mom could value, and how could other people help you have that life? That is what provoked me to write this book. So I wanted to know, why should other people care about our son, for example, and why should they help pay for his care in their tax dollars, or why should they make a charitable contribution to the healthcare home where he now lives? Why should they care about someone with severe disability or old age? So I needed to explore these questions about why those lives are important and why they're equal, excuse me, in worth to your life and my life. And then I needed to say, okay, what is the role of government, the individual, the city, the neighborhood, the country, in supporting vulnerable people with care needs and in supporting caregivers? So how can we think about care as a life-enhancing activity? And I became very interested in these questions and in understanding how to pay for it all as well, so that it's not an individual burden of care, particularly with very high needs where no one person or one family can absorb it all.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when that is the case, we need to wrestle with our personal demons too. Like, I should be looking after my son, even though he needs awake one-to-one care right by his bedside overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't, if I loved him, I would stay awake 24 hours a day.
Right.
You know, and then something terrible happens because you fall asleep and he gets into medical trouble and you think, oh gosh, you know, I've betrayed him, I've let him down. So all of these issues play into the many, many things that I've been thinking about over the years. I think this is a very kind of thoughtful, I guess, examination of the place of vulnerable people in our society and their families, and how we can help people have a life that they value, given the givens.
Well, awesome. Well, let me ask you something. You talk about both disability care and elder care. Why? I mean, do you think these types of caregiving are the same or different?
I do this as for very political reasons, because I think there are similarities between elder care and disability care. It's about family, and it's about love. And it's about sacrifice and putting on that oxygen mask, all the things that you said in your introduction. So I think, though, when I talk to people who are advocates and activists for Alzheimer's, for ALS, for Down syndrome, whatever it may be, and autism, usually people in those areas don't think outside their own box. But I think we need to. I think we need to think about our similarities more than we need to think about our differences.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we want real change in society to support caregiving families, we need to form a big movement. And that's why I'm a big fan of online sites like the Caregiving Space, which talks
mm-hmm.
about caregiving mm-hmm. across ages and abilities, and Caring Across Generations, which is another terrific organization that does a lot of activism. Again, it's very inclusive. It doesn't talk about disability-specific or age-specific issues. It just
uh-huh.
talks about what it is to love somebody who has care needs and what do they need to live well in the family.
Great. Well, listen, we've come up on our first break, so we're going to take a couple of minute break. So please don't go away. We will be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's N-A-S-S. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Donna Thompson talking about lots of interesting caregiver stuff. Donna, great interview so far. What do you believe are the most important ways that society can support caregivers?
Well, I think that every family is different, obviously, and I think we need to find a way to give support to families in the way that they need it. So families need to have some tools, and I know from looking at your website, you offer a lot of tools, Dave, yourself, in helping families understand, first of all, to identify their needs for support, and then to be able to figure out where to go to get their particular needs met, whether mm-hmm. it's in the extended family, neighbors, friends, the wider community, to find out where their eligibility lies for state support.
Right.
So people need information on what is available, and then once you know they've identified what it is they need, because it's very difficult to identify your needs if you're overwhelmed. You can't pick apart the big from the small, break
right.
it down and say, well, you know, if I had some respite, somebody to come in and sit with my mom between 3:30 and 5 o'clock every Friday, it's very difficult to think in those terms if what mm-hmm. you feel is a sense of overwhelm. So I think, you know, there are lots of tools out there, and we need more to help people, first of all, identify their needs, then know where to go to get their needs met, and to help other people understand that it's a great thing to have a small piece of supporting someone who has care needs. So I'm not sure that we have enough education in the area of giving and receiving care generally. And that, you know, I think a lot of what I try to say is it is a joy and a life enhancing thing to have a relationship with our son, with my mom, and a lot of people with care needs I know. I love being with them, and I feel good when I'm with them.
Cool.
You know, I think we need to communicate that widely.
Well, none of us got training. You know, we were all thrown into this. You know, we didn't plan on caregiver even being on our resume. And so therefore, you know, a lot of us are just floundering. And that's why most of my audience on this radio show are already burned out, you know, fried to a crisp. And we're just trying to revive them, you know, get some CPR into them and teach them that they really have to take care of themselves first. And that goes so against the makeup of a caregiver. It just sounds so selfish. Can you imagine? How can I put my mask on first when my child is sitting here screaming, I'm going to take care of their needs first? It's just instinctive, motherly almost, you know. So, yes, absolutely.
That's true. But, you know, I think one of the things that helped me in that area was, there's another disability mom I know who is a professor at the State University of New York, and she writes a lot about disability care. Her name is Eva Kate, and Eva wrote, and it stayed with me, she wrote about the idea of dependency work as opposed to loving care. And, you know, if you look at all of the care your loved one needs and you say, okay, so I need to feed them because my mother or my son cannot hold a spoon, for example, that feeding would count as dependency work. A conversation would count as loving care. But if you add up everything you do, and sometimes that dependency work that could be done by a paid caregiver, maybe not as well, but if you add up all the hours of dependency work and you think, okay, is this more than I would expect from somebody who was paid to do this job? Like, yeah, it's 18 hours a day maybe, or even 24 hours a day, then that's kind of not fair. And you have to then know in your mind at least that you as a person are not failing. There's too much dependency work here.
Wow.
So it's a simple idea. It's a shifting of your mindset that lets you off the guilt hook. And I think that was certainly important for me, because I said, I can't do all this dependency work. No one person can.
And, you know, not many people, especially caregivers, are good delegators. And so this really prioritizes what do we delegate, what can we delegate, and what shouldn't we delegate. Because the big excuse why people burn out is because a lot of them won't ask for help. And believe it or not, some are even offered, some people even offer to help and they get turned down because in the mind of the caregiver, they're saying, oh no, they could never do it as well as I could. Or, well, that's true. Maybe they can't do it as well as you. Maybe they will never do it as well as you. But if they can do it adequately, that's fine. If they can come in and watch your loved one for 2 or 3 hours, maybe they'll, you know, burn the eggs. Maybe the coffee won't be hot or good or whatever. But that's okay. They're going to survive. They're not going to die. And they're going to appreciate you more when you come back from your respite and you are refreshed and your batteries are recharged and you can start all over again. So it's very, very important to delegate.
Yes, it absolutely is. And the other thing is that our son gets sick of us. Like, he wants somebody else once in a while.
Because, I've never heard it quite put that way before, but yeah, yes, you're right.
He's with some young kid there who's more his age, and they're talking about PlayStation, or they're talking about something that I'm not interested in. I'll walk in the room, and he could say a few words. He could certainly say, "Go away, Mom." And
really?
So yes. I get that. He's having too much fun with somebody that he'd rather be spending time with. But certainly if he's sick, he wants me, which is absolutely fine. And we do kind of, as I say, we're there almost every day now. But but nevertheless, there are other people, as it should be, that if he's feeling well, he'd rather be with them.
Sure.
So I think we need to also consider that our loved ones also sometimes benefit from having a group of people that come into the home, you know, with different talents and different gifts.
So where can caregivers find support in their neighborhoods?
This is something that really interests me, because I think sometimes we do, and this has certainly been my experience personally, we do become very isolated in our home. And it is like the frog in the hot water. You become more isolated over time until you're boiling and half dead, and you kind of didn't realize, how did that happen? But people may not realize what is out there in their immediate neighborhood. We have a community center near where we live, and I'm sure that most people have some kind of a municipal community center or swimming pool facility where there's a sports center. Sometimes these are run by faith groups, sometimes by municipal governments, but like a community center where they would have various programs during the day and on weekends and so forth for all different ages and families and for all abilities. Our community center is a great place for family caregivers, and it's not unique in this regard. It has post-stroke aqua. It has arthritis aqua. It has a golden oldies weightlifting group where they lift a very light weight and they chat and they go for coffee after. They have Mom and Me running group where you run with your baby in a stroller. They have all kinds of opportunities that combine health, wellness, and social opportunities to address isolation. And so that's one thing. The other great boon for us was that we live across the street from a high school. And early on, I discovered that I could call the guidance department in the high school and ask for student volunteers to cut my grass and to walk our dog. And
wow.
And
I bet they get credit for it, too, somehow.
They do. They do. So they need to fulfill a certain number of volunteer hours in their community in order to graduate. Now, not every school district will have that requirement, but there will be students who want volunteering on their resume. And seniors and caregiving families can offer that back to the student population.
Awesome.
And the caregiver would have to just write a letter and a letter of recommendation based on, you know, their commitment to the job and whatnot. That's really handy for yard work and for other duties that wouldn't require specialized training, you know?
That's a great idea. Really creative things you're coming up with. What is a support network, and why do you think they're great for caregivers?
Well, support networks are basically a coordinated group of friends and family who work together to support a caregiving family or someone who has care needs. So, and there are a lot of online tools now to help you coordinate the help of friends, family. There's one called Lots of Helping Hands, which I'm sure you've heard of. There's one called Caring Bridge. The one that we use is called Tyze, T-Y-Z, or you say Z, T-Y-Z-E, .com, and it's free, and it's very high internet security, which makes it private, so it's password encoded and so forth. And what we, how we use it is that we have a number of paid caregivers, and we have family. And we need to talk to each other all the time. And we need to share information in the group because we all care for and about our son. So everyone has a role to play in his life. And so, for example, tomorrow we are going to a neurology clinic to see the specialist. And we need to coordinate transportation. And a few of us are going. And we need to have his recent seizure records with us. All of that is organized in this website. Then, after the appointment, I'll write up what the doctor said, and I'll post that so everybody knows what the doctor said.
Wow.
That kind of coordinated support network helps me, and it helps him. And it works to share the care, which is fundamentally what a support network is all about.
Yeah.
It's great.
And how can technology help? That is some technology. Is there more technology?
Well, some people set it up simply, you know, using the tools that they use anyway. So some people use Google Calendar, for example, or they could use an Excel spreadsheet. Some people simply use a Facebook group. But the idea is that you invite people into an online closed conversation, and it's you where you could post something like, "Mom needs a ride to the senior center next Thursday. Who can do this?" And your cousin says, "Oh, I can." And then everybody knows her ride is taken care of, and it saves you 27 phone calls. Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
That's why
wow.
technology can really help to share the care. I've tried it in the old days before the internet. I used to spend my life just frustrated trying to get people to help me.
And what are you telling the people? And what are you telling the people who are looking at you right now like a deer in the headlights? Google Plus what?
Yeah. I would say just go on Tyze.com. And have a look at it. Sign up. It's free. It's
how do you spell that?
T-Y-Z-E.
T-Y-Z-E.com. And what are they going to find when they go there?
They'll say, they'll see a picture of an elderly mom and her daughter. And then it'll say, "Are you a family caregiver? Click here. Are you a professional caregiver? Click here." Or a medical professional, because Tyze can bridge home to hospital. So, for example, for our son's Tyze network, our GP, our doctor, is on his Tyze network. So
we tell our doctors to go there as well. We tell our family members to go there as well and just kind of like register?
Yeah, it's register. It's free, and you can just start using it. There's a virtual filing cabinet that's very private and highly secure, so you could keep medical records in there. We do latest blood work results, things like that. It depends on what you need. Some people don't need medical professionals to be part of their network of support. Some people just need their sister and their brother.
So if it's just a sister and a brother, this is a good tool as well.
Yeah. It can be whatever you need it to be, but it has the capacity to include medical professionals if that's what you need.
Yeah, I can see this working for my mother. I can see it working for my wife.
Yeah, it's a very good tool to coordinate the help of others, including medical professionals, and it's used by the National Disability Institute in the States. Everybody at NDI has a disability waiver has a TIES network.
Cool. Well, we're up on our second break, so we will be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books, starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
We are back with author Donna Thompson. Donna, everyone always tells caregivers to look after yourself. How can caregivers do this when the needs are very high, similar to your son?
Mm-hmm. I think everyone who's come through an experience like that will have a different answer. But I think everybody, the common thread in most people's response to that question that I've observed is a kind of mindfulness and gratitude attitude. If you can't really get away from home and as you said, your child is screaming or whatever, you have intense caregiving responsibilities that you can't abandon, then what you need to do is find moments of respite and moments of beauty in your life. So one thing that I did, for example, when Nicholas, our son, was very, very ill, and it was kind of a time of about 10 years when he was very palliative. Amazingly, he survived, even though in 2005 they said he would probably just have 2 months to live, but he is still with us. So, and he was in and out of hospital all the time, and it was always a crisis. So what I did was when I was waiting for the phone to ring and thinking that something awful was going to happen any minute, I couldn't leave our house. But I went outside, and we have a garden, and I ripped up all the grass, and I planted a big perennial garden. And I didn't really know what I was doing because I had never gardened before. But being outside and being able to grow something when I felt our son was dying it made a really big difference for me. It gave me peace. And if a plant died, I could rip it out and put something else in, and that next thing would grow. And it gave me a sense of peace and hope. And it was very soothing to me because it was kind of like a meditation.
Mm.
And cooking was like that too. And it still is. Like peeling a potato becomes a prayer. It's just, you know, kind of looking at your hands, slowing your mind down, thinking about what you're doing, and appreciating that you're preparing something that's nourishing for yourself and for someone you love. That is very helpful, and so is journaling, I would say. If you capture a moment where you feel peace and love and happiness and a sense of well-being in your heart, write it down and look at it again the next day or later that day when you don't feel that way.
Wow, just listening. Just listening to you is calming me down, and I'm feeling peaceful. Those are great ideas. I'm serious.
But you,
I'm just kind of like zoning here, listening to her.
Because you, I mean, I just love reading about your wonderful wife and her interests. And, you know, I mean, I think to have a shared interest and to enable the passions of somebody who may have care needs, but they don't, heck, they're not dead yet. And they, you know,
right,
they still have lots of life and lots of interests. And to be able to share that interest, I mean, I remember when my dad had three strokes, as I mentioned, and a friend of his came over, a friend he had been in the war with. And even though my dad couldn't speak, this friend played the cello. And he came and he played for my dad. And then they looked at photographs of Lest We Forget or something, photographs of World War II. And they simply looked at a picture book that they could share, that they had a shared experience. This was somebody who was very gifted at knowing how to be with somebody who didn't speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautiful.
Yeah, you know, people tell me all the time, or I find out, you know, or I can discern that, you know, they feel sorry for me. They say, oh, you poor guy, you know, your wife, you know, you can't. And men especially, they just don't get how I can do what I do. Even my sister says, David, you're a saint. I could never do what you're doing and this and that. And I just don't understand what the big deal is, because it doesn't seem like a big deal to me.
No.
You know, I believe God gives us grace to do what we need to do when we need to do it. And I couldn't do what they're doing, you know, but I know I'm able to do what I'm doing, and they can't do what I'm doing, and I can't do what they're doing, because they've got grace to do what they're doing. I've got grace to do what I'm doing. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I live a normal life. It's a new normal, but I'm happy. I'm peaceful. I have no regrets. I'm okay. you know, and but a lot
so
of caregivers are not, because they don't have that attitude. I've always had that attitude, because that's just my temperament. You know, whatever life throws at you, you know, make it work. Lemons, turn them into lemonade, and so on.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. But I think there have been times where I felt really desperate because I felt that I could not meet the needs. And I couldn't, you know, I couldn't soothe the pain. Like if pain is out of control, that's a pretty bad place to be.
Yeah.
If you cannot meet the needs of the person you love,
it's
probably
terrible.
The most difficult caregiving experience. And you think that you're failing as a caregiver. That's very hard. So that's when you have to kind of call in the troops and, you know, get all of the medical help and all of the help that you possibly can But I think that's the blackest time, is that if you see somebody really suffering and you can't help them. And I mean, I think certain, you know, I think people who've been through through that experience are traumatized and they have PTSD after. It's, right. That's very difficult. No question about it.
Might as well have done a tour of service in Iraq. It basically does the same thing to you.
Yeah.
But to answer the question, yes, it is possible to be happy and peaceful while you're giving care to your loved one who's struggling. Because
absolutely.
You have control over this. And it is attitude, and it is just having perspective and so on. So let me ask you, what are the most important things that you've learned in your life of caregiving? There's probably a lot.
Well, one of the most important things, I think, is that, you know, you can't do it alone. That caregiving, when it's well done, is a coordinated team effort.
Yep.
So you need to recruit team members. And why do you need to do that? It's because I think if you are going to have any kind of balance in your life, particularly in situations where you have a loved one who is going, whose needs are going to increase over time, you need to have a team approach, and it needs to be a business plan. So, and one of the very harmful ideas I think that many of us have in our heads is that if we approach it that way, it's a demonstration that we are not somehow committed to the care of our loved one, that we should be looking after our own. And if we don't do that by ourselves, we have betrayed the trust and the love of our loved one. And that's wrong. I believe that's wrong, because I believe the best way we can give care and support our loved one is by doing it for the long haul. And that includes our own survival. Because if we don't survive this journey of care, you know, that's terrible. We have to survive it. We really do. And so I believe that the way to do it is in a coordinated team, and it doesn't have to be a big little, it can be a small team, but people who are in there for the long haul to help. That's one thing. And I think that I've learned that care is a life enhancing and a life enriching activity.
What emotions did you struggle with when you realized that you could no longer take care of your son at home and you needed to put him in a facility? Was that hard?
Yes, it was. And, you know, at first I would have these dreams. I knew that I couldn't look after him. I mean, the long-term care hospital in our city said they wouldn't take him because his needs were too high. So that gives you an indication of that he needs one-to-one awake nursing overnight. He has seizures overnight, and he has very complex sleep apnea. So he stops breathing, and you need to rub his face to restart his breathing. And it's combined with his seizures. It's a very complicated system. He can't wear a CPAP or a BiPAP mask. So anyway, and during the day, he's tube-fed, and he can't move any part of his body himself. So the combination of his needs are very high. So when he went into care, I had these dreams. One of the dreams was that I was swimming and there were snakes in the water. Another dream was that I was in my home, but there were no floorboards. There were only joists, and I had to, like, walk as if I was on a balance beam around my house, or I would fall and into a pit, you know, underneath my house. And So these are just perfectly transparent indications of the way that I was feeling, so fearful. But I moved in with him when he moved out. I was really lucky to be able to do that. And that way I could train the staff myself to make sure that I knew they knew. And I climbed into bed with him. I held him. I mean, he's 26, and he made other people leave the room because he was embarrassed. But I just said, "Oh, Nicholas, I need to hold you. I need you to hold me, and we'll tell each other it's going to be okay."
Mm.
And I just didn't leave until I felt like it was all right, and it was. You know, it is now. This is 4 years later. And it's all good now. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're an amazing person. Of course, all caregivers are, aren't they?
Yes, I think we are, because we have an extraordinary experience of selflessness. And what we find in that, I think, is a greater sense of ourselves. It's a bit of a paradox, but it's a lot of time of listening, of giving, of being that kind of shadow helper to somebody we love. And it is an exercise in mindfulness, really, and in prayer.
Well, Donna, you've given us so much information here and so many great ideas. How can someone get a hold of you if they wanted to continue this conversation, or go to your website, or go to the resources that you've mentioned on this show? Maybe you can reiterate them again.
Sure. I always love it when caregivers get in touch with me. My website is called The Caregiver's Living Room, and it's www.donnathompson.com. And there's no P in Thompson, so it's thomson.com.
Oh.
Donna Thompson.com.
I think I spelled it wrong.
That's okay. Everybody puts
a T in
it. I'll have
to fix that.
I'm Scottish variety. That's, we call ourselves the Dry Thompsons. No P. And my book is called The Four Walls of My Freedom. That's my home. and lessons I've learned from a life in caregiving. And it's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere, at all major booksellers. And
it's a bestseller, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Yep. And it came out in hardcover in 2010, and a new paperback edition that has two new chapters in 2014. I was just going to give you the website for Ties as well, and that was the network online platform that we use in my family, and it is great. There are lots of them, though. So if you look up Lots of Helping Hands, all one word, Ties Personal Network, and it's TYZE.com, there are, as I say, there are lots of them. And I would say to a caregiver, just pick whichever one sort of feels easy to use and is the best one for your family.
Awesome. Donna, thank you again. This time went so fast, but thanks for allowing me to interview you, and thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today and every Wednesday live at noon Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, so you can listen to them at the same link any time of the day or night, 24/7. They're also on our website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, and our shortcut link, CaregiversCaregiver.com. And you can get them on iTunes as well from my website's radio show tab as well. And just a reminder, when you're on my site, please don't forget to take the quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout?, so that you can assess where you are in the burnout process and get your free copy of my book. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.